Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to the main course. I'm your host, Patrick Martins. We're broadcasting out of Roberta's Restaurant, 261 Moore Street. Big news, Phil Jackson signs with the Knicks. It's official, I think. It is by now. So I think that's big. I mean, I have now no doubt about it, a Nets fan. I have season tickets. I split with some of the guys here at the restaurant, and it is just awesome to be in the fifth row. I love the Nets. They've done amazing, but who can deny, even as a Nets fan, that Phil Jackson coming to the Knicks is not super exciting? I'm very, very excited. I mean, they should be a championship contender a couple of years,
10,
I think.
15 years.
Yeah, the way they've been going.
Yeah, last Phil Jackson will be 80.
The last time they won, he was a coach. I mean, he was a player.
Mm-hmm. Was it 73?
73, yeah, I believe they won two in a row, I think. 71, 72, 72, 73, something like that. But Phil Jackson, wow, that is impressive. I want to see him on the bench. Just, I think, you know, that's how you leave your imprimatur on an organization. I know Larry and these guys, Larry Bird, they can be upstairs and, you know, still affect the team. But something about Phil on the court, you know, Zen mastering it all over the place. Well, the voice you've been hearing is Chef de Cuisine of Craft Restaurant, Ed Crochet. Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
We also have Edward Trick Brown in, who's just sitting in. We'll ask him a couple questions later. He's a veg cook there. Before we start, you know, big news, the Heritage Radio Network crew, the team at the office, came out with this really impressive press release. And, you know, they're going to be really focusing on these three issues on the news part of the site. And, you know, I didn't know this. In 2013, chicken surpassed beef as the most commonly consumed protein in America. And, you know, they're the breed most impacted by the factory farm system. So, you know, very interesting. I mean, there can be dozens and dozens of stories throughout the year about this single issue, you know, hopefully improving the lives of broiler chickens around the country. And then the second thought, second theme that Aaron and the crew picked, I also did not know this, from field to fork, over 40% of food produced for consumption in the U.S. is wasted at some point along the production chain. Wow. That's a lot, and it connects to global warming and all that. So if you see an FW on any of the news shows at the top of the homepage, that'll delineate food waste. A lot of interesting people are going to come on. And actually, I was surprised. I've heard that since this press release came out, the of the three topics, the one that's getting the most play is this Future of Food Leadership, FFL, which sounds terrible if you just say it, fufful. But Future of Food Leadership sounds a lot better, and it is seeking revolutionaries in the food world. And people on our 35 shows and people around the country have already started to nominate people for these profiles, 100 of the world's most promising young people working in the food world of drink and agriculture. So, Ed, you're too old. Trig, you could still do it. You could still win. But you're like me, Ed. How old are you, Ed?
33.
Well, that's very young. I'm 60.
I look older.
I'm 62.
Lies.
But we do, we'll just jump into the show. I mean, normally we cut to a break, but let's just get right into it. I really enjoyed reading your bio, Ed, and you started, I mean, currently you're the chef de cuisine of Craft Restaurant, which is, of course, a restaurant where you collaborate with Tom Colicchio, who people see on his famous show.
Top Chef.
Top Chef, of course. And, but, you know, let's fast forward or go all the way, rewind, I should say, all the way to the beginning. You were the son of a naval officer.
Yep.
And I wanted to see if any way traveling around or him traveling around influenced your early views on food.
You know, to be honest, I was so my dad was a submarine commander, wow, which is like the coolest thing ever. You know, it's much, much cooler than being a chef.
He'd be gone for months at a time?
Yeah, he would be. He would be, I mean, it was a lot. My mom, my brother, and I, when I was growing up, he would be gone for up to 6 months at a time. So I grew up in Connecticut, first 8 years, moved to Virginia for a couple of years, moved out to Hawaii for middle school and first year of high school. And then I went to Italy after that for high school. And then we settled in a small rural town in Pennsylvania for my senior year of high school. Little bit of a letdown on that one after Italy and Hawaii, but and then I went off to college. I went to Florida State for a year. That didn't work out as well as I had hoped. And then went to Northern Virginia Community College for a year, and then ended up at the University of Maryland. While I was in school, my parents lived in London, so it offered me the chance to go over there and check out England for a while.
Why does he have to move so much? I mean, couldn't they just, he's going in the submarine anyway. Couldn't he fly to where the submarine's going? But they, I know they move.
Yeah, it's the nature of like military employment. You spend 3 years here, you spend 2 years there. Some people are lucky enough to spend a little bit longer of a period of time. Submariners typically move around every few years. So you'll have like, it's like a sous chef job. You know, you take a sous chef job for 2 years and then you move on to either a bigger position or a different restaurant or, same thing. My dad was an engineer on a submarine in one location. Then he was the executive officer in another. And then he was a captain of a boat out in Hawaii. So, yeah, I mean, I moved all over the place. It was crazy. Looking back on it, it's I think it was harder growing up like that. You know, like, you know, it's great to go to Rome and go to Florence and hang out in Germany for an afternoon. But, like, you know, as a 16, 17-year-old kid, I wanted to just hang out with my friends and, like, you know, graduate with all of them and be on the same baseball team for 3 or 4 years in a row and, you know, not have to move around as much. Retrospectively, it's like, I mean, it's awesome. You know, I've been to Kauai. I've been to, you know, all over Europe. Like, you know, I've seen like Hadrian's Wall between Scotland and England and like Edinburgh Castle. Like this is stuff that people dream of that I got the opportunity to do when I was very young.
I imagine you're a good self-starter with that because you have to kind of fast forward into the culture that you're in. And when I was reading the way you just came to New York and you picked up a Zagat and you applied to all these restaurants and then you trailed at Kraft. I mean, self-starting, getting to a new place or in a new field and just getting going.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like, look, I don't think that – I think like anybody else, I don't like change all that much. But it's like, you know, when you get to a point where you have to do something, yeah, you got to get after it. So it's actually weird, though. Like my outlook on food, I never ate anything when I was a kid. It was pasta with tomato sauce, hamburger. I didn't even like ketchup. Didn't like mustard. I thought onions were gross.
It was the only comfort you had. You're like, I moved my whole life, but that hamburger, it'll always be
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I guess something like that. I just, for whatever reason, I didn't really enjoy food all that much when I grew up.
Interesting.
And then,
but you did taste it. I mean, you were around it. It was everywhere.
Oh yeah, it was all over the place. Like I lived like Hawaii, Italy. They have great food cultures. You know, they're very different. Obviously,
but you didn't learn about the local fish or anything.
No, I was very sheltered in what I wanted to eat. Weirdly, the way that I ended up going into cooking was when I was at Maryland. I lived on campus for a little while, and you know, you live on campus, you go to the cafeteria, you go to like the, you know, now they all have like fast food restaurants all over their food courts, like Taco Bell and Pizza Hut, and you know, you just eat that slop all day long. And then you know, your junior, senior year, whatever, you move off campus a lot of times, and I had to learn how to cook. You know, I didn't have the food hall like a 5 minute walk away anymore. So
you used Jamie Oliver as an inspiration at that point.
So my family was in London at the time, and I would go over there, and like Jamie Oliver was food star A number one over there. Every network had a commercial about it. Like if the local supermarket he like pushed a product, like truffle butter would be gone for a month. Like truffle butter, all of a sudden you can't get it because Jamie Oliver has a 30-second spot on BBC saying, "Hey, it's awesome." So. I started cooking through his cookbooks. And then,
what was good about him? Just freshness or unusual ingredients? I mean, was he a local guy? Was he an import the best from wherever it is guy? What was his mission?
I'm not sure. He always seemed very approachable. Like, he always seemed like, at the end of his show, he was always cooking for seven people. You know, he was always having a dinner party. Like, it always seemed like food was a conduit to hang out with people. It's the same reason, like, I like the... You know, around the same period of time, Mario Batali had a show on the Food Network that was like him, and he always had three guests sitting there that he would cook for. It's like that's what this cooking thing's about. You know, it's like getting people together. It's
But he had a mission a little bit. I know he was going busting into public schools and being like, look at the shit that your kids
are
eating.
Yeah, and that was a little
bit progressive.
Yeah, and he has done that. And he has a couple restaurants in London that are only, I think they exclusively employ people from underprivileged backgrounds. He now has a little bit of like a zeal for his idealism. I think at the time when I was growing up and like, you know, learning how to cook, it was much more of a, hey, here's this dude who like seems like a nice guy who's cooking food. And the food was very approachable. It was all very mm-hmm. simple, but like it just allowed you to be exposed to different ingredients and, you know.
Does he have an equivalent here in America with that mission side of him? Because Tom is obviously a person who does put things into the spotlight, but in a different way.
Tom's a very big advocate for hunger issues in the U.S.
Right, with his wife, right, who made a documentary.
Yeah, Lori Silverbush made a documentary. I think she actually produced the documentary. It's No Place at the Table, I believe it's called. There's a gigantic hunger problem in the United States that a lot of people aren't aware of, you know, like mm-hmm. especially... You know, I mean, up in New York, like you see like a few homeless people and everything, and it's sad, but like, you know, we feel like, especially like working in an opulent restaurant and like, you know, people with all this money coming in, like Manhattan's, you know, the amount of money on the island's crazy. And then you look out in rural America and there mm-hmm. are a lot of people that go home hungry every night that, you know, like, I think, I was reading something in the news the other day that like a large percentage of military families rely on WIC checks, like mm-hmm. women's infant and children checks to... Mm-hmm. you know, feed their kids. It's crazy.
Pretty crazy. Yeah, for sure. Well, then you ended up going to school. I mean, you studied history, government, and politics, and then you went to L'Académie de Cuisine. Was that, mm-hmm. where is that?
It's outside of DC.
Okay.
It's in Gaithersburg, Maryland.
So is it worth it going to school, or do you learn more along your career by working in kitchens?
I think that you certainly learn in culinary school. You learn techniques, you learn how to just function in a kitchen environment. You're sort of force-fed all that stuff when you have a job, though. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you're not going to learn if you come work at Kraft, you know, you're going to start in the salad station, and you're just going to be, that's what you're going to do every day, and you're going to get great at it. You get very individualized instruction on specific things. Culinary school is sort of like, it's like Disneyland, you know what I mean? Like, here, let's cook everything. It's going to mm-hmm. be amazing, you know? Like, you go to Indian food land, and you can go to like soup land and salad mm-hmm. world, whatever it is. And it's a great way to be exposed to all this stuff and to be like, actually hold a whole lamb mm-hmm. or to, you know, roast a ribeye, you know, it's great. In the end, is it necessary? Is it worth the money? I mean, my program was 6 months long. And then, you know, we did a 6 month internship. I think that was perfect for me. Like, I was like 26 years old at the time, so I didn't have time to go to CIA for 2 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. It wasn't an option for me. So I never even looked into that as a possible avenue. For me, it was worth it. For someone that goes to CIA for 4 years and drops however, like, what, 100 grand now? I don't even know what it costs. It's crazy. I don't know.
For me, I didn't go to cooking school, but, you know, it's a collaboration, the people you meet, the people mm-hmm. in your class, like, that's interesting. But you can basically do without it after 12th grade. I mean, life is a lot more interesting. I wonder if more people are going to go to college or fewer people go to college. Something tells me the trend is fewer.
I would guess so, but I don't know.
You just go start something in Arkansas, Oklahoma. Now, all of a sudden, there are these little bubbling energies in all those cities, you know?
Well, it also, like, it used to be that... I don't know, like, growing up, like, my parents were always, you know, you go to college. That's mm-hmm. what you do. Yeah. Either when you're 18 years old, you're going to get a job, and you're going to move out, or you're going to go to college, and we'll pay for it. So it never seemed like an option for me. But now, like, you know, you get out of college, and you don't necessarily have a job. Mm-hmm. It's not here's a college degree, then you go get a job in your field.
Doesn't mean what it used to.
No, not at all. Certain degrees do. You know, you get an electrical engineering degree. There's a very obvious direction for you to go in. I had a history and political science degree. Like, what was I going to do?
I'm surprised you're even working at Kraft right now.
Oh, yeah. The fact that I'm even employable is ridiculous.
So now your first day at Persimmon, that was your first restaurant. So, mm-hmm. I mean, did you have any... What's your first day, I was going to ask? But, I mean, I guess I'm looking for funny stories, things you learned that the school didn't teach you, horror stories. I mean, was that a good first interaction?
Persimmon was great. It was a little bistro right outside of D.C., French American bistro. The guy that runs it, Damien, was awesome. He was a great guy. He was basically a line cook for a long time and was having a kid and had saved up some money. And like with 75 grand, he and his wife opened a restaurant that was open for mm-hmm. like, I think 15 years before they closed it down recently. But I'd actually, I had worked in a restaurant before that. I was a bartender and a server at Bennigan's.
Oh, wow.
For like, I think 6-7 years, something like that. It was crazy. Like that was my money in college. That was my, that was what I did for the first couple of years out of college when I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. So
where does Bennigan's rank in the pantheon of fast food places?
It's pretty far down there. Yeah. I read a Consumer Reports one time. It was like the 30 restaurants in that chain, like Hard Rock Cafe and Planet Hollywood and Applebee's and TGI Fridays. Food quality, Bennigan's ranked above Applebee's, but below the other 28 on the list. It was ridiculous.
Man.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that was crazy. And then Persimmon was much more of a get into a restaurant, start cooking. Like every day I worked the, my station for lunch was meat, garmanger, and pastry. So we would do like 60 people lunches with two people on the line, and I was putting up everything. It was nuts. But you know, it taught me like the value of cooking things correctly. It taught me the value of keeping clean. Of, you know, you have that many stations at one time with that many dishes, you have to work very organized.
Yeah, for sure.
Today's music is by TacStar on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
So then you ended up walking, you became a line cook at Kraft, which is also complicated. I mean, it's a very vast menu.
Yep.
But tell us about, you just worked up the hierarchy and then also worked at Colicchio and Sons?
Yeah, I was. I started as a line cook at Kraft after, I think, 10 months at Persimmon. I decided I wanted to move up to the city. Like you said before, I grabbed the Zagat Guide and just, I didn't know anything about the New York City dining scene. So I thumbed through the Zagat Guide. Found Kraft, went on a trail there, went on a trail to a couple other places, and they
you just walk in, you walk and say hi.
No, I literally just printed my resume out and mailed it to the addresses on like for 40 restaurants, and very few got back to me, but Kraft was luckily one of them.
Anyone else famous get back to you and you think of what might have been?
Who did? Marcus Samuelson's restaurant Aquavit did.
Okay.
And Babo ended up getting back to me a day after I had taken the job at Kraft.
Interesting.
And who else? I forget the name of the other restaurant that I trailed at. But
It's interesting to see, you know, if they had sent the letter a few days earlier, what might have happened.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I really wanted to work at Babo. Like, that was a place that I really wanted to work at. I had read Heat recently, and I thought that, again, not knowing anything about the New York dining scene, like, that just seemed awesome to me. And I love pasta and Italian food and everything. But no, I mean, Kraft was, I think that getting the opportunity to work at Kraft really worked out very well.
Mm-hmm. Kraft was a progressive menu, right? I mean, yes. I was trying to describe it earlier to one of the people I work with, that it offered you choices, like within categories that previously hadn't offered you choices. Like you could choose four types of mushrooms or four types of braised vegetables, different types of fish. But it was a vast menu. You could spend a lot, but you also had complete freedom to craft your own meal.
It's all a la carte ordering. It's a family style restaurant. The ideal is that everybody orders what they want, and then the food gets to the table and you all share. It's about the community of eating, not so much it's not a tasting menu only restaurant. It's not little pretty food. I mean, I think the food is elegant and beautiful in its own way, but it's elegant in the way that a 2-pound steak cut off the bone with the bone on the plate and a piece of fried rosemary on top can be elegant.
Rustico.
Yeah. It is rustic in a certain way. I mean, that said, the dining room is obviously beautiful. The service is great.
Yeah. What's that guy? Sanchez, the guy who's been there forever.
Santos. The guy that buffs the floors every day and cleans. Santos
is great. He introduced
himself.
I mean, yeah. And then the head captain guy, is that?
There's a few captains that have been there for
a long time.
Yeah, Dale, Cesar. Cesar's great. But yeah, I mean, it's a there are people, the restaurant opened 13 years ago. There are plenty of people there that have been there since the day they opened the doors.
Also worked at Colicchio and Son. So what are the differences and commonalities between those two restaurants? I mean, are they similar, basically?
They are similar in the sense of where we get our food from. We only use the best purveyors. We use you guys. Mm-hmm. A lot of the, you know, try to get our produce as much as possible from all the local farms. You know, great seafood, dayboat guys, pretty much exclusively. They differ in the sense that, you know, Colicchio and Sons is more tasty menus. It is plated food. It's mm-hmm. meant to be, it's an opulent New York City restaurant, very high ceilings, crazy lighting. Like it just, you walk in there and you almost have your breath taken away as mm-hmm. when you juxtapose that with Kraft. It's like you walk into Kraft and Kraft is homey. Kraft is comforting. Kraft mm-hmm. has wooden tables. Kraft, you know, it's warm colors. You know, Colicchio and Sons is feels like a big deal restaurant. Mm-hmm. It's great. And the other difference is that, Colicchio and Sons, I think is about 4 or 5 years old now. Mm-hmm. Kraft is 13. Kraft has reached its maturity and it knows what it is as a restaurant. It's a great thing. Colicchio and Sons is, I don't want to say finding its place, but it's always evolving. It's improving on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. You know, you know, the nature of being a young restaurant, the nature of not having the established clientele that, you know, we have at Kraft for being around for so long. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, that said, they're both great restaurants.
And what's the politics of working with Tom? I mean, you have your own ideas. He has his own ideas. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's a concept that existed before you came.
Sure.
So you follow it, but you also bring it into new directions. So how
does
that work?
I mean, it's sort of like Tom came up with a blueprint, the style of the menu, how the concept and the idea of what is behind the food that we put out on a day-to-day basis. But as far as like, you know, going out and finding the products and calling the purveyors and deciding what exactly is going to be on the menu, that's my responsibility on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. So,
and, would you win if you were on one of his shows? Do you look at that and say, I would totally, I mean, I've always wondered.
I mean,
that.
Sometimes like I watch Top Chef sometimes. Yeah. I watched it a lot before I moved up to the city and, I like the show. I like to think that I would make it to like the last five pretty consistently. But I mean, you know, who knows?
I once saw Padma, right? No. She called our butcher shop at the Essex Street Market and said, I'm going to come pick something up. I'm like, I want to meet her. I'm like, these TV people. Uh-huh. Like, is she really that pretty in person? She pulls up in a car. I was like, whang!
Yeah,
my eyes like popped out of my head. I know she went out with Salman Rushdie, but man, she just carried herself like a real star, and I felt like a million bucks. I was like offering to clean the tires of her car, and, like I was carrying the turkey. I was like, it's not secure. Let me secure it. Give me 10 minutes. I'm going to build a little security device here so the turkey doesn't roll around. Man, but she was very cool, and I was psyched that she buys her heritage turkey from us every Thanksgiving.
No, does she?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Yeah, she's striking in person. I've seen her at the market a few times.
Yeah. So now how many people are you responsible for? I mean, I just did a staff tasting at Kraft. I mean, between front and back of the house, it's 60 people?
Yeah,
people?
60 to 80 people I think we employ.
So what's your management style? And I'm going to bring Trigg in, Edward Trigg Brown, the veg cook, and ask him to follow up. But what is your management style? I mean, how can you be everywhere at the same time?
I don't know. What is my management style, Trigg? What do you think?
That's an interesting question.
I think that...
Does he come and ask you, hey, how's it going? And the vegetables, it's faster if you do it this way. Or, I mean, how do you interact with the head guy there?
I've worked for Ed for a long time now. And there's, you know, I know what my responsibilities are. And Ed delegates, you know, responsibilities... in a way that I know it's expected of me, so.
He sets clear boundaries and you can carry him out, so it's a good working environment.
Yeah.
It's not stressful. He's not, like, lashing you for, like you hear in these top kitchens. Well. Now, can you be tough on the team?
Yeah,
and what are you tough about?
I mean, look, the goal every day is to put the food out as well as possible. You know, you don't want anyone, at the price point that we're at the level that we are, the people that eat there need to have a good time. You know, like they need to go out. It's difficult for people to leave a restaurant having paid a few hundred dollars for dinner. That's all it is. It's dinner, you know, feeling that they've gotten their money's worth. So a big part of that is making the food go out, you know, perfectly every single time.
So what's wrong? What will break down after 13 years and all this experience? Will something be not be the right temperature? Will the timing be off? I mean,
oh, what's sure. The I mean, like details? Like look, the restaurant's been open for 13 years, but the cooks are always changing. I mean, I've been on the job for a little bit less than a year here. I mean, I know the company well. But people are always changing, ingredients are always changing, and it's just a constant, I don't want to say battle, but it's a, we're always trying every day to make everything just a little bit better and to perfect, like, you know, Trigg's ability to cook a vegetable, perfect Sebastian's ability to roast a duck breast and render it out just perfectly, you know, to make the, like getting a black bass, the skin crispy on that, one of the most difficult things in cooking, you know, but teaching Travis how to do that day in and day out, it's like, it's an important part of the job, you know. So I think that, you know, I like to set clear boundaries of what's expected. But I also, like, I think that, you know, a lot of kitchens when, and maybe still, but when I was coming up, there was a lot of yelling, a lot of screaming, a lot of, you know, bad names thrown at people for, you know, for burning something or messing something up or coming in late or whatever the case may be. I really think that happy cooks make better food. It doesn't mean that we're running an amusement park there, but, you know, I like these guys to come with a smile on their face every day and to keep the environment as light as possible. And then, you know, when service hits, we, you know, we got to hunker down a little bit. So,
I mean, we're cooking pretty simple food, so it has to be perfect every time. And Ed does a good job of, you know, letting us know that when
you're not.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's good. It's it's simple. There's not much of a margin of error, right? Like the margarita pizza or a simple vegetable
Like the best stuff there is to eat. You know what I mean? Like a caprese salad in Naples in August is like the best thing you could possibly eat.
Yes, for
sure. You know what I mean? Like,
well, Trigg, tell us what vegetables are you cutting in these days? We are in March; it's been freezing. So, what have you been working on?
We still have some winter vegetables on the menu, like braised Tuscan kale and pan-fried Jerusalem artichokes, but we're starting to see some cool new spring product come in. Like we have some we did some salsify the other day. We have some endives coming in.
March is a weird time of year because it starts to warm up around here, but like the ground hasn't felt that yet.
It still has a kiss of winter to it. A kiss of spring.
Exactly. So we'll start to get some vegetables from some small farms in California. We work with Satter Farms, which has some smaller farms down in Florida, which allows us to sort of feel the spring stuff a little bit earlier. But ramps are coming soon.
Ramps. I took Carla Petrini, the founder of Slow Food, on a tour of the U.S., and it was ramp season. So by the time we got down to Maryland, people were like, ramps. He was like, enough with ramps.
Right, I'm tired of it.
They're like, did we make a mistake? But they grow ramps and fiddleheads, right? That this is their big season.
Yeah, fiddleheads will be a little bit down the road, but ramps are like the first sign of spring.
They're the most potent or the most that can survive the cold, or they're the quickest growing?
They're just sort of like when everything starts to warm up, they just pop up first. I'm not exactly sure why. I'm not a forager or a farmer, but they just sort of start to pop up first. That's how it goes.
What's the best season for the veg station?
I think right now is really exciting.
It's a challenge.
As I haven't cooked the veg station through the spring season, but I have worked in the company during the spring and cooked a lot of vegetables. Yeah, Calico and Sons. So I was a fish entremet in the spring, so I was experienced like the fiddleheads and when asparagus come in ramps, similar trends run through the restaurants, and I'm excited to concentrate specifically on these new spring vegetables that are going to come in soon.
That's good. No, it's a challenge. It's a real diverse. I mean, it keeps changing. That's what's amazing. Well, this is very, very interesting. Any other special menu options? I mean, that people should be aware of in the meat section or fish or unusual? I mean, I imagine this is the time for lamb, right?
Yeah, it's the time for lamb. And you're not going to believe this, but Heritage Foods carries a wonderful lamb.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. It's mail order, heritagefoods.com, heritagefoodsusa.com. We will ship you a half lamb or ground beef, or ground lamb, I mean. We're talking all about ground, because it's we always say the best way to launch the domestic lamb market is to move through whole carcasses for the farmers so that they don't have the added challenge of selling all the guts. So grinding We pull out the racks, the chops, and the bone-in legs, and we grind the rest. And we try to, you know, get people to eat pasta with lamb sauce, lamb ragu. It's the best portion cost. But anyway, you got me into this. This interview is about you, not me. But now, how many crap restaurants are they? They are thousands. I mean, hundreds, dozens.
No. Fewer.
But you have Dallas. And
So Dallas and Atlanta both had crafts in them.
Okay.
They closed within the past few years.
Oh, okay. I didn't
know. And there's a craft in L.A. There's a craft steak in Vegas.
Vegas, I've been to that one.
Yeah. That one's
pretty big.
Yeah, it is. Tom Colicchio's Heritage Steaks. Really focused on grilling meats over there. I haven't been, but it's supposed to be a beautiful restaurant.
400 seats or something crazy.
It's big. Yeah.
How many seats is Kraft?
Kraft is, I believe, 95. Between 90 and 100, depending upon how you count the bar in there.
And then you have a private room downstairs or no?
Next door. Have a private room two doors down.
Okay.
It's where we do small parties and events and weddings and, you know, anniversary dinners and whatever else.
Originally, it was Kraft Bar's home, right?
Yeah, that back in the day when Kraft opened, shortly after they opened Kraft Bar, two doors down. Now Kraft Bar is around the corner on Broadway.
Yeah, it's a nice place. I've been making deliveries there when I started and all that. I was make the deliveries and still seasonally with the lambs. It's a very nice place to deliver to.
Yeah.
You go through the two front doors, always locked during the mornings and all that. But it's a very interesting interview. There's obviously a website, craft.com. There's also Witchcraft, right, which is a fast food alternative.
It's not, I mean, they follow the same practices that we do as far as like getting the best products in. It's their sandwiches though.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's a nice big step up from Subway, you know, but a quick way to get a lunch
done fast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, Ed Crochet is the chef de cuisine of Kraft Restaurant. This is an excellent show. You can download it on iTunes and all these other methods. We recommend people go. It's an institution, so we're big into pushing people back towards institutions. It's a restaurant that comes to mind all the time, and sometimes people try new things at the expense of, you know, returning three or four times a year to old standards that built the foundation. So go back to Kraft. Follow Ed on Instagram, right?
I just opened an Instagram account yesterday.
Oh, yeah, I know. You were talking, you were like already berating one of your chefs for not following him. You're like, I Instagrammed it. He's like, you've been on for 2 days, chef. I didn't know. But thank you for being on, and come back often.
No, thanks. It was a good time.
Yeah.
Had a great time.
So stay tuned for the next show on the schedule, which is Arts and Seizures with Mike and Judy. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.